Well, it's a great honor to have Ambassador Ron Dermer on the program. And let me tell you, my comments belong to me, so don't project them on to the great ambassador. He doesn't need those headaches. Mr. Ambassador, how are you, sir?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me on your show, Mark.
Well, it's a pleasure. Okay, you saw what the president did on Friday. What's your take?
Well, I think it was a historic speech. It shifted U.S. policy from a policy of containment, meaning containing a nuclear-armed Iran, to a policy of preventing a nuclear-armed Iran. And I know a lot of the discussion over the last few days has been on whether or not Iran is complying with the agreement, and it's totally irrelevant because the greater danger of the deal was not that Iran would get to the bomb by violating it, but that Iran can get to the bomb by keeping it. Because after a few years, all of the restrictions that are placed on Iran's nuclear program are automatically removed. It doesn't matter if Iran continues to be the foremost sponsor of terrorism in the world. It was a very bad deal. It essentially put the world, the P5 plus one, all the international community, put us all, frankly, on cruise control heading over a cliff. And everyone is focused on whether the cruise control is working, and no one pointed out that there's a cliff ahead. And that's exactly what the president did, and I give him great credit, Mark, for a simple reason. He could have kicked this can down the road. He could have said, hey, this whole thing is going to blow up 8 years from now, 10 years from now, 12 years from now. Why do I have to deal with it? But I think he's making the responsible decision, and he's saying, I'm not going to steer America, Israel, or anyone else off a cliff. I'm going to steer this car in a different direction. And he's asking people to join him in fixing this mess and turning a bad deal into a good policy vis-a-vis Iran. And I think that's the right thing, and Israel fully supports it. The Saudis and the Emiratis fully support it. And when the Israelis and Arabs are supportive of something, people should pay attention. That's usually a pretty sound policy.
Tell America just how dangerous Iran is. Is Iran the greatest threat that Israel faces right now?
Oh, absolutely, but it's not just the greatest threat that we face. It's the greatest threat that the Arab states face, and I think it's the greatest threat, frankly, that America faces. You can have a debate about that. You have maybe a more urgent matter in dealing with the problem of North Korea and its ballistic missiles, but Iran is a militant Islamic power. America is the great Satan for Iran. Israel's a little Satan, and Europe, I don't want to offend the Europeans, but they're just a middle-sized Satan. But it's clear that that Iran has America in their gun sights. You know, for them, Mecca, the Saudis, their breakfast, they'd like Jerusalem for lunch, and they want New York for dinner. And it seems crazy, but that's what this regime is. It's a crazy, fanatical regime from 1979. You know, and I'm sure many of your listeners know the history of taking over the embassy, of bombing the Marine barracks in Beirut, of bombing American embassies in Africa, of killing hundreds and wounding perhaps thousands of soldiers in Iraq with these IEDs. Iran is a great threat. And if you think Iran is a threat now, and you see that threat today, you see it in Iraq, in Kirkuk, facing the Kurds, you see it in Syria, you see it in Lebanon, you see it in Yemen, you see it in Gaza. It's hard to find a place in the Middle East that's a problem, that Iran is not the main problem or does not have Iran's fingerprints on it. But if you think Iran is a problem today, just imagine that Iran doesn't sneak in or break in, but simply walks into the nuclear club, and now you're threatened with a militant Islamic regime armed with nuclear weapons. That is going to be a grave danger to the peace and security in the world. And the president's speech is the first step, I think, in changing the direction of this whole policy, and I really applaud him for it.
I want to talk briefly about Hezbollah. Isn't Hezbollah sort of the militant militia wing of Iran? And there was a report out the other day about Hezbollah actually has terrorist cells in the United States. What do you know about these things?
Well, I would say that Hezbollah is the foreign terrorist legion of Iran. What they're doing, not only taking over Lebanon, they're working to help Iran in Syria. They're training Shia militias all throughout the region. And they have perpetrated terror attacks in 25 different countries on 5 continents, and as the Prime Minister has said publicly, they're also in your hemisphere, and some of senior American officials have talked about what Hezbollah is trying to do in terms of establishing sleeper cells to perpetrate terror attacks in the future, what they're trying to do right here in the United States. This is a very, very dangerous movement, and every effort should be made to stop them and to roll them back, and there's some tough financial sanctions that are coming down the pike in Congress. It's important also to end this farce of a political versus a military wing. That's all the same thing. It's a very, very dangerous and very well-trained force. We've already been in one round of conflict with Hezbollah in 2006 where they fired thousands of rockets at Israel. But today, Hezbollah is far more dangerous. In fact, they have firepower that is more lethal than most armies. And what we are doing and we will continue to do is prevent that terrorist force from becoming stronger and stronger and getting all of these sophisticated weapons which Iran is trying to send to them through Syria. That's why Iran is in Syria. They want to establish a land bridge between Tehran and Tartus on the Mediterranean. That's what Iran is after right now, and everything should be done to stop that and to not allow this new Iranian curtain to fall down in the Middle East.
And they're trying to, by hook or crook, set up bases from which they can, Hezbollah and others, and even the Iranians for that, from which they can do enormous damage to Israel, aren't they?
Absolutely, and the Prime Minister has been very clear about his red lines. He's not going to allow Iran to establish permanent military bases. They're trying to do air bases and land bases and sea bases. As I said, they're trying to establish a port in the Mediterranean. You probably have to go back to the time of the ancient Greeks to see the Persians with a port on the Mediterranean. But it's not just a traditional imperialist Persian power. This is a militant Islamic regime that has a radical ideology and intends to export that ideology all over the world. I know it sounds crazy, but they believe in a lot of crazy things in Iran. And the greatest danger to our world, my prime minister has been saying this for two decades, the greatest danger to the world is a militant Islamic regime that arms itself with nuclear weapons. That is the true hinge of history. And the reason why this deal is so bad is that it gave Iran a path to achieve that goal. All they have to do is wait. All they have to do is wait for the calendar to change. They don't have to change their behavior. All they have to do is be patient. And if they are patient, they don't need to sneak in. They don't need a break in. They can just walk into the nuclear club. And as I said, I give great credit to the president for taking the stand now, for not kicking the can down the road against the advice of many of his own advisors, against the wishes of your European allies. He's taking a stand against Iran, and he's standing against the current. And I think it's probably the most admirable thing that this president has done, and I think the most important speech. And the question is, can we now all work together to try to fix this mess and to get a responsible policy vis-a-vis what I think is the greatest danger to all of us, Iran?
Well, that is a good question. Do you think we can all work together and quote-unquote fix this deal? I'm very cynical about this, but what are your thoughts?
I actually think that it's possible. Look, I don't think that you're going to get the Iranians to agree to anything. Why should they? They got the deal of the century. Why should they change it? I don't think you're going to get the Russians and the Chinese to agree to anything. The question is, can you do things in the Congress and can you do things with your European partners that can correct the deficiencies of the deal? I think the president started that process with the speech that he gave, but he also said, in what I think was the most important line of the speech, he said, if this thing's not fixed, I'm going to terminate it. And the president doesn't need Congress to terminate America's involvement in the deal. He doesn't need the Europeans. He can do it himself, and he can slap UN Security Council sanctions himself. That's the way the deal was constructed. He doesn't need Congress to terminate the deal. What he needs Congress for is to fix this thing. So I think the critical question is, will Congress and the Europeans work with the president at fixing it? And here's how they would do it, just to give you an example. One of the problems of the deal is it doesn't address the whole problem of Iran's ballistic missiles. Now, Iran is building intercontinental ballistic missiles. And as you know, and probably most of your listeners know, Israel's on the same continent as Iran. So those ballistic missiles, intercontinental ballistic missiles, they're not for Israel. They're not for the Arabs. They're for Europe and the United States. And the question is, will the Europeans enact crippling sanctions if Iran continues its intercontinental ballistic missile program, yes or no? I think you can move Europe to a yes. Another question is, will America insist that every single facility in Iran be subject to inspections? The Iranians have said, we're not going to allow for the inspections of military sites in Iran. Where do you think they're going to do their nuclear research? Where they did it in the past on weaponization and other things has been on military sites. They're saying, we're not going to allow that. That's not subject to inspections. Well, the president can tell the Europeans, are you willing to publicly say that all sites in Iran are going to be subject to inspections, and if the Iranians refuse, that's a meaningful violation of the deal. That's another thing that I think he can achieve. And finally, this is the most important thing. I know we're getting a little bit into the weeds here, but this is the critical question. Can he fix the problem of the so-called sunset clause, which are when the restrictions that are placed on Iran's nuclear program are going to be automatically removed? There's no reason why those restrictions can be removed, should be removed. Can he find, can action be taken in Congress and maybe with follow-up agreements with the Europeans to make clear to Iran that the United States and Europe will not accept a nuclear-armed Iran today, in 5 years, in 10 years, or ever? Unfortunately, the Europeans right now are in a position of containment. They're willing to contain a nuclear-armed Iran, and, okay, well, we'll stop them for 5 years, for 10 years, but ultimately they're going to get nuclear weapons. The president is not there. The speech that he gave Friday hopefully will shift the whole policy of the international community to him, and I think that it's possible that he can do it. I don't know if it's probable, but I think there's a path, and everyone who's concerned with the peace and security of the world should work with the president right now to turn a very, very bad deal into a good policy vis-a-vis Iran.
You know, Mr. Ambassador, we only have a few more minutes. I want to ask you about this containment idea. How could you contain Iran once it has nuclear weapons? That is, you know, even unlike North Korea, Iran is toppling regimes in that part of the world. Iran intends to topple more regimes. Iran's ideology is extraterritorial. And with nuclear weapons, I'm not sure when we say the Europeans want to contain what?
Well, you know, what a lot of people say, Mark, is they say, look at the Soviet Union. They had so many nuclear weapons. They could have destroyed the United States. They could have destroyed the world, and they were contained. But I would ask those people to answer a simple question. How many communist suicide bombers do you remember? Because every time the communists were faced with a choice between their survival and their ideology, they always chose their survival. That was the case in Berlin. It was the case in the Cuban Missile Crisis. You cannot bet the future of the world on the idea that a militant Islamic power will make the same choice. That is to endanger our children and our grandchildren on some great cosmic bet. I think it would be a very, very bad idea. What Iran intends to do is to get nuclear weapons, and then underneath that nuclear umbrella to continue to export what it calls its revolution, to dominate the world. I know it sounds crazy, but right now you have Shia fanatics fighting Sunni fanatics in the Middle East. And they're trying to determine who's going to be the king of the militant Islamic hill. But I can guarantee you there is no place in their world for Christians, for Jews, for Israel, for America, or for anyone else who does not accept their fanatic creed. And we all have to do everything we can to prevent such regimes, such militant Islamic regimes, from developing nuclear weapons. The other problems, you know, they're difficult. We can deal with. We're going to have to confront them. We're going to have to roll them back. We cannot allow these regimes to develop nuclear weapons. That's why we have to change what is a very, very bad and dangerous deal.
Well, we're going to have to go. Let me just say, Reagan rejected containment. He wanted victory. You know, that whole detente mentality was about containing the Soviets, and he said, no, I want victory over the Soviets. I want that Iron Curtain to come down. That's why Netanyahu in many ways reminds me of Reagan. Ambassador, it's a great honor. Okay. I much appreciate... Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm just going to tell you, you know, it's funny that you said that, because when I heard the president speak on Friday, what I thought of, the first thing that came to my mind was the evil empire speech.
Yeah.
Which so many people opposed at the time, where all of the European allies turned their noses up to it, where even people within the Reagan administration was opposed. And I understand, you probably know the history better than me, that they took it out of the speech and then he put it back in.
That's
the
right.
Speech and they took it out and they put it back in. But I'll tell you who would influence. It influenced the dissidents who were sitting in the Soviet Union, men like Natan Sharansky, who heard that mm-hmm. speech and knew that finally you had an American president that was willing to confront evil. On Friday, I think the message that was sent in Iran, in North Korea, and to all your enemies around the world is that America has a president who is prepared to confront evil.
Ambassador Ron Dermer, you're terrific. We much appreciate you taking the time. Be well.
Thank you.
All right. God bless. He's remarkable, isn't he, Mr. Producer? I don't know about you in the audience. I could sit here and listen to him go on for a long, long time.